Oh, do you want to dance the little unit for, do you know where it is? Where
We got through Manish Tana, I think, last time. So Be'ezer Hashem, tonight we will continue from Avadim Hayin, and hopefully make a nice dent in the material of Magid. I have one question for you before we start, and that is whether we would prefer to spend the next 2 weeks just talking about Inyanim of Magid, or whether it's better to speed up for tonight, which doesn't necessarily mean we have to go faster, it just means we wouldn't do as much material, and then spend part of next week doing like some of the halachas of Motzi Matzah and Korech and Afikomen and all the rest of the Seder, rather than just focus on Magid. Is there a preference from anybody who's here now?
Magid,
don't care. Magid's good? Okay, fine. Take a little more time with Magid and not necessarily go through.
I chose a lot of
them. Oh, you said a lot. Oh, sorry. You said
Magid.
You said
Magid.
Really doesn't really matter. Really.
We could try to do a little bit of both, but then you're getting not the whole part of either. You're getting a little bit of both, so I don't know if that's any better.
You get to choose.
I get to choose? Okay, fine. So we'll. So I guess I'll just decide. We'll see how far we get tonight.
Yes, you host the shiur, then you get to choose.
No.
Okay, the shiur. So let's get started with Avadim Hayinu, which is the beginning of the actual Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Before we do anything in the actual Haggadah, let's talk just briefly about a couple quick points related to the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, and just a couple brief halachos. There are actually halachos related to the Seder night to telling the story. Not too many. I mean, there are some interesting points, but specifically halacha. I'll just mention like two or three points here. As we know, there is a mitzvah of telling the story the night of Pesach, that we all know. What the mitzvah is based on, we'll talk about in a couple minutes when we get into one of the parts of Magid. But essentially, it's from Pasuk of Vigat Levincha Bayom HaLemor. It says you should tell your child, saying, Bavur Zasah Shalom Mitzisim Mitzrayim, and that's how most of the Rishonim understand is the basis, or at least part of the basis, for the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Again, as we know, that this mitzvah only comes up once a year, the night of Pesach, so we got to make sure that we do it right. Of course, we know that the main part of the mitzvah is telling your child, okay? So you want to be telling your child the story. As we'll learn about in the Arvabanim, at least very briefly, obviously each one should be on their own level. A three-year-old is not going to have the same story as a 15-year-old, so you have to find a way to sort of balance between them, that I think we all know. But in addition to telling your child, part of the mitzvah also is for everybody else to tell the story. So it means even if you don't have children, or whatever the situation is, there's still a mitzvah for yourself to be misaper, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and for everybody else at the Seder to do so as well. Just a couple additional points related to that. Number one, is there a mitzvah? Are you supposed to recline? The mitzvah of Haseva, which I don't even remember if we spoke about last week. Are you supposed to recline when you tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim during Magid? Is there Haseva or not? Anybody know? Anybody guess?
Eating and drinking thing, no?
Okay, maybe.
Is the question again? Sorry.
Is there a mitzvah of Haseva, of reclining, the same way that you recline when you do the when you drink the Arbakosos, so when you eat matzah? Are you supposed to recline when you tell the story? Not necessary. Okay. Very non-committal, right? Close. Okay. Okay. So the answer is yes. You're both right. You're right on both accounts. What does that mean? So most poskim do say that there is no reason to recline when you tell the story, including the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Both say that you don't need to do haseva. Haseva, as you said, is basically something which is related to eating. It's supposed to be the way that you eat, the way that they used to eat. You know, they would eat in a very luxurious way, at least for their standards. For us, for Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're not really eating, so many poskim say that you do not have to do that. The Meiri actually seems to say that maybe you should.
That you shouldn't just say
because
it's not like
Mechubah. So hold on, we'll get to that in a second. I was going to say that as a separate point, but you're right. I mean, Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch, not only are saying that you don't have to do Haseva, but maybe that it's better not to. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. In terms of in terms of the Meiri, so he seems to say that maybe you should do it, and the point would be that it's derech chayrus. Okay, the reason why we recline is to show freedom, and I guess in those days they used to recline to show that would be considered freedom even when they weren't actually eating, even if they were just talking at their table, as the Meiri says. Rav Rimon, again, I haven't done a full survey here, Rav Rimon seems to say in his Haggadah that he suggests that really you could do whatever is comfortable for you, which probably means for us that we're not going to be reclining. That he says whatever is Yoter Noach is good. what the Mishnah Berurah says that Rav Daniel is referring to is basically, I don't have it in front of me, but he has a line where basically he says when you read the Haggadah, you shouldn't just read it as like, oh, it's just, you know, a nice cool thing that we're reading. It's got to be a very special occasion. So he uses a bunch of adjectives, which I don't actually remember which ones he wrote. I have like four of them here, but I don't know if these are the all set or this is my embellishment. I think he says that you, it should be read with the Ema, the Rolamut, the Chedva, something like that, which is basically a combination of excitement and awe and maybe even a little bit of fear, but also joy, ecstasy. Again, you could throw in all those ideas. Again, I apologize, I didn't have the exact motion, I didn't write it down. But the point of the Mishnah Berurah is basically this is a very special experience. Okay, it's something we should recite with a little bit of trepidation because of we're describing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself did to us in Egypt. That's quite a great thing. And it's not something to just say, oh, that's cool, that's my friend who did that, you know. That's on one hand. And on the other hand, obviously, we have to be very excited and happy and rejoice at what happens. So that goes together with Mishnah Berurah's opinion that that generally we wouldn't recline for Yetzias Mitzrayim because it's not just the regular thing that you just, you know, sit however you want. It's considered to be something that you actually have to concentrate on and say with a certain amount of, you know, serious emotion. That would be the way that I would put it. So again, the common custom probably is not specifically to recline. Again, if you felt that it was more comfortable to recline for whatever reason, maybe there's room to say that you should. But again, the most important thing is to remember this is a very important occasion and a very special mitzvah that we only do once a year, and make sure to do it properly, despite the fact that you may be a little bit hungry and your kids may be, you know, crying and doing whatever else they're doing. Try your best to really make the most of it. Two other points before we move on, maybe three points. What is the most important part of Maggid that needs to be said? Anybody know? Rangel Gamliel. Okay, good. So that's definitely one thing, which we'll see in the Haggadah if we get to it. Rangel Gamliel himself says that you're not Yotze the Mitzvah if you do not talk about the Pesach, the Matzah, and the Maror. So that certainly must be said, even if it's a Shas HaLechak, even if you don't have time, or for whatever reason you miss half the Haggadah because you're upstairs or you're outside, whatever it is. Any other suggestions of which other one or two parts of the Haggadah might be important, critical? Excellent. Good, okay, so you would have said Aramiya Vidavi, that's true, and if you have a choice, that's definitely better than, let's say, Dayenu and, you know, the parts about the Arba Bonim and stuff like that. You're absolutely right. In the scale of things, that's probably definitely more important. If you really are stuck for time, though, and you really miss most of the Seder, so the Mishnah Berurah, I think, mentions Rav Gamliel specifically, and also a lot of the posts can mention Avadim Hayinu and Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah Yevoseinu, because there's an additional requirement that the Gemara talks about, which you're probably familiar with, which is Maschol B'Gnusim Asayim B'Shvach, which we'll speak about in just a couple minutes, but if you're familiar with it, that you're supposed to start by telling the bad parts of the story, the negative parts of Klal Yisrael, and then move into the positive parts.
So the Maschol B'Gnusim, which is...
Exactly, so we'll get to that. That actually may be both of those points, Avadim Hayinu and Mitzchila. But because of that idea of Maschol B'Gnusim Asayim B'Shvach, so it seems that those two points also are very important to mention, because both Avadim Hayinu and Mitzchila are both the beginning of talking about the negative parts of where we started, and then from there we move into the positive parts. So that's also included in the list of things that are very important to say. And if you have more time, Aram Yovid Avi and all the actual psukim and the drashas, and obviously after that, everything else. Yeah.
Is there anyone that says, go to the Haggadah really quickly, get to Motzi Mashulchan Aruch, and then go back and go in, if you have little kids, and go back in greater detail?
Half of the relatives are probably at the same time.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, unfortunately it doesn't work like that. Maggid's got to come first. The Sipur Tehas Mitzrayim is supposed to come. That's supposed to be the main...
No, so you go through
yeah.
it. You, go through
no, the you take this, you pick it up, you read it.
Oh, you read it just fast, right.
You get to the meal,
and then you go back, and then you...
You could do that if you have to, but that's not... You know, yeah. It's not...
Right.
Right.
You're nixing it. All right.
I don't know if you want to. It's not optimal. Let's put it that way. It's not optimal.
Not
yes,
optimal.
I understand that you're hungry, and I realize it's a problem, and it's a problem
for. No,
it's
not for the kids.
You know,
the kids get to,
I understand.
Get to experience everything. Yeah.
Even the little kids.
I'm saying so they'll get to most of the
Well, they're supposed to stay up anyway.
If
they don't stay up, that means you didn't do a good job of keeping them awake. So.
But it's not an experience. He would do that.
It isn't.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all. That's what I would think.
You can't be breaking the meal.
Of course you can. I mean, you can go above and beyond, but you should try to do Maggid the way that it should be done. You know. Meaning, if you say everything in the Haggadah, that's you're fine. You're good. You've been yotzei the mitzvah wonderfully. But it shouldn't be that you're rushing through it and mumbling everything, and it's not a real Maggid experience. I don't think that's what they had in mind.
I think the opposite is kind of a danger, too. It's like, you have all these Divrei Torah that you heard and they're really cool, you want to share them.
And then the kids are off playing a game, going
to sleep, and you blew it.
I'd agree with that also. I think that's true also. I mean, don't overdo it, depending on your children and your ages and your guests.
But yourself.
But make it a real mock. Don't just rush through it. You know, actually try to do things there.
That's really the important thing.
Yeah.
For whatever level.
Yeah. Okay, there. Good. Okay.
When we're talking about your simple Yitzhak Ritzvayim,
yeah.
Can I just something that came to me now, because you've got an obligation to teach your child, but your child is potentially a young child under the age of chinuch,
right.
And therefore,
right.
Obviously the sukkah that say, you know, you've got to do it, but I'm trying to understand the mechanics of how it might work, that you've got an obligation to do something to someone that might not understand, and they might not be able to.
You're right. Everybody at their age, being under the age of three, I could hear that maybe no, but from the age of three and on, even though you're right, for the positive mitzvah of chinuch in general, we usually say it's around the age of five or six. When it comes to this, I think even the kids that are 3 years old can get something out of it.
I'm not asking about
and the proof is, ask your child who's in Gan, and they will tell you half about Gan.
I'm not asking about the pragmatics of it. I'm asking about the halachic mechanics of it.
Right. No, that's the point. I mean, because Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just any regular mitzvah. I mean, you're right. Most regular mitzvahs say that's true for. But here, number one, I'll put it this way. Number one, the point about chinuch is that whatever age they're able to get something out of it, they are supposed to do it. So most kids that are less than five or six don't really, you know, that's not really considered to be an age of chinuch. For here, because this is like the basis of all of where we're, the whole Jewish people, and because they can understand some of it, as you see, from kids that are younger, so then it seems like you're really, you are supposed to. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
In there, you would say that even if it's not just about the learning, it's also about the whole experience, right? That's what you're going to say also?
No, I was going to say that if you look at the Manishtana, the kids are like maybe the 2-year-old and
right.
3-year-old.
They're the ones who are like,
they already know. The 5-year-olds really
right,
know.
Right, they know the answer.
You know?
Right, right.
That's not my question.
Right.
The question isn't that, because
yeah.
that I completely
right.
get
and right.
I understand. I'm asking about the mechanics, the
I understand.
Sort of
yeah.
behind
yeah.
why that might
yeah.
be.
Yeah, so sure, I didn't see so many of the covers about differentiating between the chinuch age and not age. I think it's just assumed that,
yeah.
again, maybe there's things I missed. It's very possible, but out of the stuff that I've seen, you know, it's really, I think it's just assumed that because it's such a fundamental mitzvah, and the whole point of the mitzvah is to teach the kids, even the kids that are 3 or 4 years old, are included in the mitzvah at their level,
which is exactly
what the Haggadah says,
like
Sheinu Deilu Shul, from the Arabatim, which we'll get to hopefully in a couple minutes if we get there. Okay, good. Last point before we move to the actual Haggadah, and this is an interesting point, and that is, does every single person have to read the Haggadah, or can you have one person being motzi, everybody, meaning one person reading every part of the Haggadah? So the answer is, there are different than Haggim about this, as you may have expected. What else is there going to say? You know? That was obvious, right? Just a couple points of who says what. So the Shulchan Aruch Rav and the Vilna Gaon seem to say that really, as long as the Baal HaBayis says it, or whoever it is, but everybody, one person can say it, everybody else can listen. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't listen. It means that you should listen. But if you listen and he says it, so that's good enough. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to say that the minhag is that everybody would say it, meaning that really everybody should say it if one person reads it out loud. But certainly everybody should say it themselves as well. And others say that maybe, you know, again, well, often some families do is they rotate, and you have one person saying one paragraph, the next person saying another paragraph. Again, everybody should listen, though, okay, because ideally, again, even though we said there are certain parts that are critical, but l'chadchila, you're really supposed to read the whole thing. So ideally, even if one person is reading, everybody should listen. If you miss it, you would, let's say, make it up on your own, you know, read it quietly to yourself afterwards. And the last question, unless you have others, is for this question from a few people before, what happens if you want to have a child read? Your child who's 10 years old, you want to get him involved also.
Well,
so can he
read?
Manishtana,
why should that be any different than any other part of the
Bible? Manishtana is different. Why? I mean, you can guess this yourself. What is Manishtana all about? Exactly. I mean, that's the prompt. The prompt is the child is supposed to ask. That's part of the prompt. But the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, it seems like actually telling the story, the father is supposed to really tell the child. But aside from that, it's just the idea that a child, this is what Rav Malavit says, I'm saying halacha. Again, it could be that some others disagree. It's very possible if you know anybody who disagrees. But I think this makes sense. Rav Malavit basically says that that somebody who's not a child, who's not bar mitzvah, can't be motzi other people in a chiyuv, just like any other mitzvah. So here also, if nobody else is, if they're listening and he's reading, so then if that's part of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, he can't be motzi anybody else. So basically, the chachila, and maybe even b'diavad, it would seem that somebody who's less than bar mitzvah probably should not be reading on their own unless everybody else reads along. But again, I could hear that one could argue that maybe this is different. It's not the regular rule of somebody being motzi somebody else, maybe because it's telling a story. As long as you're hearing, even if he's not bar mitzvah, it's not the same thing. I could hear that, but I didn't actually see that. So. Yeah, for sure it's fine. Yeah, for sure.
If he's not reading Avadim Hayinim and Mitzchila and Rabbi Gamliel, then you're still fulfilling obligations to read the mitzvah.
Right. Correct, but in Mechachila we try to read everything.
Your view isn't to say like every word, right?
That's the best.
Correct.
But L'chachila, the whole Haggadah is part of the Sipur. Okay? I mean, there are some parts that are maybe closer, more fundamental to the Sipur, and some parts that are less, but L'chachila, everything really should be read, should be read the optimal way. That's really the way that it works. Okay. Let's go on. Unless you have any other questions about Sipur, Tias Mitzrayim? Okay. Good. So now we can finally go to our Haggadah. So Avadim Hayinu is the paragraph which is immediately after Manish Tana. I'm not going to read the whole paragraph inside. I'll leave that to you to do it now and later. Otherwise, it'll take us too long. But just in terms of some points to think about, and this is, I guess, the point we'll try to get across here. First, what exactly is the function of Avadim Hayinu at this point in the Haggadah? Meaning, what is Avadim Hayinu trying to do? And this is what we'll try to do, hopefully, for the rest of the Maggid, at least try to understand a little bit about what each paragraph's goal is. The Haggadah was structured very, very, very orderly, in a very ordered way. Who wrote the Haggadah, we don't really know. There's a good chance it was probably some people either in the Amoraim period or in the Gaonim period, or a combination of both. There's some things that were maybe later. Many things may have been from the time of the Amoraim, maybe even a little bit earlier. It's unclear. But whoever did it, again, very, very structured and orderly. What is Avadim Hayinu's goal here? Anybody want to suggest what the simple ideas or more?
You get the basic answer. At least
okay, so you want to say this is the short answer, right? You have the short version and the longer version. This is the short version. Okay, good.
For the mitzvah of Tzibur Yitzim Mitzrayim.
Okay, meaning what?
It means that it tells you that you've got a mitzvah of Tzibur Yitzim Mitzrayim, and what is it?
Great, okay, excellent. I mean, basically, this is the beginning part where we basically, in short, in like two lines, we basically say what the story is. We were slaves in Mitzrayim, and then Hashem took us out. Okay? This is where we understand why everything is happening. In terms of why, this paragraph specifically, so again, this I think it makes sense. This is really the short version. This is what some of the Farshim sort of point out here. We'll talk in a minute about Matzchel B'Gnutz B'Sayim Mishvach. That's also very important, which we'll talk about in just a second. In addition to that, so I'll just tell you some of the Rishonim say the following point. This, by the way, again, if you want to ever look up these Rishonim, I don't know if anybody else has this Haggadah besides me. Do you have it? Torah Chaim Haggadah. Sorry, it's a little, I don't know how this happened. It got stuck on some other book got stuck on the cover here. I don't know what happened. Anyway, it's really interesting. It's like the Torah Chaim Chumash, but it's basically all the Rishonim. Interesting Rishonim, the Ritva, the Orach Chaim, the Avodrum. If you look at like a lot of the Haggadahs, these are all the Rishonim that are quoted. So it's very nice. They talk about Rishonim. They play Rishonim on Gemara around Chumash when you read them on the Haggadah here. It's really, really interesting. So a few of the Rishonim here mentioned that this is actually not only the short version of the story, but also actually the answer to at least some of the questions of the Manish Tana. The question is, which ones? That's what's not so clear. Which ones do you think this answers? Does it answer any of them? Not exactly, right?
Not in a real...
Right. Yeah, exactly, right. So again, I'll tell you, without getting into the details here, basically, the simplest answer is from the Rosh Bates and a few others like him. So he basically says that the Shibboleth HaLeket is the one who says that the most clear thing that it answers is Haseba. It doesn't actually tell you about Haseba, but once you learn that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, so the fundamental point we're supposed to get from here is that we do things at the Seder that are Derech Cheres. Okay? And then you're right, it's sort of a bit of a diuk, it's not Mefurosh, but the point is, if the kid is, halfway smart, and halfway understanding what's going on, if he understands that we're celebrating our freedom, so then anything that we do which is demonstrating freedom will be explained. So the Shibboleth HaLeket says basically that's Haseba, the recline, which again in our days is a little harder to understand, but in those days that was obvious because everybody understood that reclining was considered to be something which had to do with freedom. Others say that it's also matzah, and dipping is also the same thing, meaning matzah, if you understand the story, then you know that matzah is because of freedom, and dipping is also something which may be done because it's luxurious. We spoke about this last week. We don't really know why we dip, but maybe one of the reasons why we dip is to show, again, that we're free and things like that. So that also may be included, which, again, is not explicit in the paragraph, but the point is that once you understand the idea of freedom being the theme of the night, so we can at least partially answer some of the questions. So that's what some of the Rishonim say. Do you have a comment? Or?
I did, but I don't know if it's now the right point.
Okay.
I don't know the right time, but I mean, I can say it if you want. But based on the Shibboleth HaLeket, when he said it, I think there was the swap question though. The original question was about Rosh Hashanah, and Avodah Yemayin was already there.
Right, it's a good question. I didn't see the Mepharshim talk about that. That would maybe make more sense, according to the Rishon, that say that it's all the questions, meaning it's not just Haseva. It's answering a lot of the questions. Maybe not the one about Mara yet, but at least all the rest of them. Even that one also, I guess you could argue, once we know that we were slaves. The problem with that answer is that it's really hard to say that that this paragraph is telling you about Matzah and Mara. But you're right, it's a valid point. I hear the point. I don't know the response. Maybe he does, but I have to look again. They do have some footnotes here. I'll take a look afterwards to see if he says anything else. Okay, good. I'll take one more point in Avadim Hayinu. Again, there's lots of points on every paragraph of Haggadah. I'll just take one point here. That is the following point. The Avadim Hayinu, we say that even if we were all Chachamim, we were all Nevonim, we were all Zekanim, Kolon Yodim Es HaTorah. Okay, we still have a mitzvah to tell a story. The question is, why is that? If we all know the story, why do we need to tell it again? What's the point of telling it every year? And again, this, by the way, is assuming that this is true, even if there's no children there. Okay, that line in the paragraph probably is assuming that even if you're not telling it to your children, you still, if you, every single person knows the story very, very well, they know the whole Gemara inside out, and all the Midrashim inside out, which we can't say that we do, but still, why do you have to tell it? So what do you say? What's the answer? This is easy. Anybody can answer this one. Why? What's the reason why is the mitzvah? You're right. What's the point of the mitzvah? So the answer is, I mean, you could have a lot of answers, but there you go. That's what I was going to say. Excellent. That wasn't hard to figure out, right? That's pretty easy. You don't need to be with Daniel to figure that out. So the Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss, and his Haggadah, which I didn't bring here, but an excellent Haggadah also, but he's not the only one. I'm sure this is a very widespread answer. He says the point of the Sipur is not just to, to tell the story, to say, okay, that's nice, we fulfilled our mitzvah. It's to feel the emotion. Okay, the story has to have an emotional component to it. Meaning what? Meaning that learning the story is definitely a part of the Seder, but if you just learn the story and you don't feel anything, it doesn't change anything about you, then you've missed half the point. So the idea is that even if you know the whole story already, once you tell the story again, you have to tell the story in a way that's going to get you excited and get you emotional. Wow, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. Look what we just became, Am Yisrael. This is an amazing thing, right? And if you're missing that, then you sort of missed it. And certainly you can't get that if you don't even try to tell the story. So the point is it's not just about the actual intellectual experience, it's also about the emotional experience. And that connects to what we said before from the Mishnah Berurah, who says that you need to say the Haggadah with Eman Yira and Chedva in a very emotional type of way. It's not just an intellectual experience, even though intellectual learning is definitely a very important part of the component of the Haggadah as well. Any comments on that before we go to the next point? Okay, good. Next point. So we know from the Gemara that there's a halacha, we said before, Maso b'gnus u'misayim b'shvach, right? That we start the Haggadah with the negative parts and we finish with the shvach, with the positive. What does that mean, negative and positive? Does anybody remember what that means? What does it mean? Gnut, bad things, negative. Was that? Yeah, you already mentioned it before. What do we mean by that? What negative in what way? So the answer is, in the Gemara, that it's a machlokas. Okay? There you go, excellent, now we're talking. Excellent. You said it before, I knew you couldn't have forgotten it so fast, right? Okay. Machlokas in the Gemara, what type of negative gnut are we talking about? And by the way, either way, just be aware this is also unique because if you look at other religions, no other religions ever talk about the bad parts. Nobody's ever going to say how terrible the people in the religion were before they started Islam or how bad Muhammad was before he became, how bad, the Christians. It doesn't happen. It's a Jewish thing. Okay? And this is not just true in terms of this. There's a lot of ways that this comes up in Judaism that we are willing to talk about.
Just one interruption. Farm sale.
They went already, I think. They already went. No? anyway, it's okay. We'll be done 10 minutes before. So, that's it's a very Jewish thing to say we understand where our roots are from, the bad parts, and then we get to the good parts. So one says, Avadim Hayinu, and the other one says, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. What's the difference between those two answers? You probably already figured this out.
The answer I know is the answer of Nisim Shalom.
Okay.
One is about Kedusha and the other, and Chol and the other is about Tumah and Tahara.
Very interesting. I don't know what that means, but it sounds very good.
Okay. Look at it again, but.
Okay. All right, so you have to explain it a little better. I'll tell you the Pashat point, which I think is probably the simplest explanation. Avadim Hayinu is describing what aspect of slavery? We say we were slaves and Hashem took us out. What aspect? What type of slavery are we talking about? Just simple, not complicated here. Just what? Physical. Exactly right. It's physical. Mitzchiva of the avodah zarah yevotenu is describing what type of slavery? Is that physical slavery? No, that's spiritual slavery, meaning that they didn't worship God. Who is that talking about? We'll have to get to that later. But the point is that it seems that there's a fundamental machlokus in the Gemara, or not machlokus, at least two different sides, about what slavery are we referring to when we talk about the bad going to the good. Either it's physical slavery, or it's spiritual slavery. And either way, the point is we got redeemed from the physical slavery, and we also got redeemed from the spiritual slavery. And what's the halacha? What's the halacha in our Haggadah? Which one do we do?
We
do both. Excellent. What might that symbolize to us?
Both.
That both are true. Meaning there was physical slavery and physical redemption, and spiritual. No, that's not the right answer in this case. And spiritual slavery and spiritual redemption. And both are critical to understand, and both are critical to celebrate. Okay, that's why Pesach is really a holiday of both. Both the physical redemption and the spiritual redemption. And think about both as you go through the Seder. You should know, by the way, some Rishonim actually said that Rav and Shmuel never disagreed about it. They actually both were just saying a different side, but each one agreed to the other one. That's also a possibility. But either way, our halacha is that we follow both. Okay, so spiritual and physical are both very, very important. Both important to think about who we are and how we can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. We need to have the physical freedom as well as the spiritual freedom. Okay, what is the reason why we have to do Maschol B'Gnus Mitzrayim B'Shvach? Okay, what do you think is the reason why this is important? Start from the bad and go, move to the good. Any suggestions?
Dramatize.
Okay, good.
Our appreciation of the salvation.
Excellent. Okay, that's a very, very important point. You can't appreciate how great the redemption and the salvation is unless you understand how terrible it was beforehand, right? Very, very important. Rav Moshe Feinstein in another Haggadah called the Arzi HaLavonon Haggadah with a lot of Rabbanim that have Divrei Torah in there. So he has a really powerful idea about this, which I have in one of my sheets here, but I'm not going to go looking for it now. Basically, he wants to say that point, that you need to know where you come from, okay? And he says, Baal Tshuva or somebody else also, if you've gained a lot over a certain amount of time, and you start feeling, well, you know, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I'm still not doing this well enough, and you get a little depressed about this sometimes. And he says, well, sometimes you need to look at how far you've come in order to be able to appreciate where you are, even if you feel that you have this far to go. But when you look down and you see how far you came up the ladder, you could say, wow, I really came very far. And here also is the same idea that in order to appreciate what we just said, you know, the freedom and serving Hashem and the physical and spiritual, you need to be able to appreciate how bad things were beforehand. And once you see the extent of the slavery, both kinds of slavery, then you can say, wow, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did and look where we are today. Even despite the fact that we still have a long way to go, we've come very far. That's a very, very important point, I think, to learn about Maschol B'Gnus Mitzrayim B'Shvach, and something you can apply in your own life as well. Whatever point it is, you always think you want to do more, which is wonderful, but at the same time, sometimes if you do push too hard, then you start to feel a little depressed, you're not getting anywhere, you sometimes have to take a step back and look backwards and see, where have I come over the past 10 years? And this is true, by the way, about Aliyah too. I'm not about Aliyah here, but if you think about it, you know, it's definitely the same point which you can think about and appreciate. Good. Any comments before we go to the next paragraph?
So why aren't they together? Why do we have the Avodah Zarah halfway through?
That's a good question. So let's look at the next part of the next couple paragraphs, and let's see if we can sort of come up with an answer. Okay. I think to answer that question, I would say that probably you have to also use the idea that we said before about Avadim Hayinu being like the short answer. I mean, Avadim Hayinu is the short, quick answer to what we're doing here tonight, the night of the Seder, and also a little bit of the answer to the Manish Tanas. And then before we go to the main part of the Haggadah, we want to add in a couple points before then. What are those couple points? That's going to be the next couple paragraphs. Okay, let's see what we say. So we say, Maza Relezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Relezer ben Azariah. Okay, we have this story here with all these Chachamim. They were in Bnei Brak, and they were telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim the entire night, until the Talmidim said, it's time for Kriyas Shel Shacharis. So again, what is this paragraph doing here? What's the structure? Why are we doing this now? What's it coming to show? Anybody have any very basic suggestions here? This is just pshat, not drush here.
They who were so, the Torah scholars, even they had to tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Exactly, right. I think that's exactly the point. Okay, I'm, again, very posh at level here, just to get the structure, and this is why it's helpful to have the Haggadah. Was it?
I think part of it's also, yeah, it's, you know, we're sort of defining all the parameters of
Excellent.
And it's like, until when is sort of one of the parameters of
excellent.
Who
okay.
says it, including Chachamim.
Excellent, excellent. So again, that's an excellent point. Okay, so if you look at the next couple paragraphs, that's exactly what I think the pshat is here. That the next couple paragraphs, all the fun stuff at the Seder, where all the Divrei Torah come, is basically defining the parameters, which again, Rav Soloveitchik used to use to say, that shows you that Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just emotional, like what I said before, it's also an intellectual learning experience. It has to be done in a learning and a lumdus type of way. And that's done by not just telling the story, but also talking about how to tell the story. And that involves what we said in the last paragraph, everybody, you know, klonu chacham, klonu bonim. And this is the beginning of that. Who tells the story? And the answer from this paragraph is we see that everybody should tell the story, even the chachamim. And how long should you tell the story? Meaning, what time do you tell the story? And the answer is all night. Maybe you don't have to tell it all night, and there's a shaila about that also. Maybe we stop at chatzos. But the point is that kol ma'avar is a meshubach, certainly as long as you can do it at night is considered to be a good thing. At least till chatzos, maybe even after chatzos. So that's on a pashat level, that's what this paragraph is doing here. One other point you could add in, which is a whole dvar Torah by itself, which is a nice, you can to summarize it in 1 minute, why did they all come to B'nai Brak? Why did they all go to Rabbi Akiva here? Anybody know the nice idea? It's a very famous idea. It's very, very nice. No idea?
Say that. Well, there's a lot of ideas, but one of them
just one.
Nice. Is that Rabbi Akiva was the optimist. He was sort of like the person who would say, you know, the fox is coming out of the destroyed Beit HaMikdash, and he was laughing, and everyone was crying, and he's saying, just because the prophecy of the destruction, the prophecy of the rebuilding. So he was sort of like, and every time there was, he was always able to see the positive.
Excellent.
And you know, presumably this was shortly after the destruction, so people needed the camp to him for encouragement.
Excellent. Okay, that's exactly what I was going to say. Okay, good. Rabbi Akiva was the optimist, and they all came to him basically because they wanted chizuk. It was not an easy time in Jewish history, and they said, well, why should we be celebrating Pesach now and freedom if we're all slaves to the Romans, so to speak? And basically, Rabbi Akiva was the one that got them, apparently encouraged them to continue telling the story. And in the end, you see what happened? They told the story all night, which means obviously they were encouraged. And Rabbi Akiva basically would say that just like in the story of Mitzrayim, we see what the end goal was, and we see what the end result was. Hashem redeemed them, everything turned out well, even though it took a long time to get to that point. So too, in our generation also, suffering from the Romans and the Churban Bayis Sheni, there is an end to it. It will happen. It may take a long time, but it will come. And you should be strengthened and encouraged that that will happen. That, of course, is true for us today also. In Gaulis, after 2,000 years, we've started to make our way back here to Eretz Yisrael. But even aside from that, you know, still we have to have encouragement and hope from the Seder that eventually Mashiach will come, and the entire Gaulis and the entire suffering at the hands of the Goyim will end. That's another very, very important point we can get from here. Again, I think it's a really nice idea. Okay. Any comments before we go to the next paragraph? Okay. Moving right along. Amar Elazar ben Azariah. So Elazar ben Azariah says, Haryani kiven shivim shana. Okay, 70 years old. We're not going to go into the whole story of how that happened now. You may know already. He says, and I did not merit to have mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim at night until Ben Zoma made a drasha from the pasuk of Montiscos Yom Tzitzchon Meretz V'Tzayim Koy Mechayecha. Yimechayecha Yamim Koy Mechayecha Leilos. It's the nighttime. And the Chacham is saying, no, Olam Hazeh is Yimechayecha. And Koy Mechayecha, all of the Israelites teach you about Yimot Mashiach. What is it talking about here? What is this paragraph doing here? What's the point? In line with what we said before, what are we trying to learn here about the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim from this paragraph? Anybody? Would
they? When does it happen?
Okay, good. So this would be a more additional point about the when, not just in terms of how long can it go for, but also when is it supposed to happen, in terms of what time of day or night. And what's the answer from this paragraph? The answer is at night, meaning Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah basically says that I like Ben Zoma's drasha, that it should be done at night. Okay, now again, there's a lot of, you know, discussions here in the Rishonim, here in Haggadah, and this is actually taken from a Gemara in Brachos, believe it or not.
I thought this was doing something completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, you what the mitzvah isn't.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a second. I'm not sure if you're right, but your point is absolutely right. We'll see in a second what that means. But anyway, in terms of the pashup shot of what it's doing here, it seems like it's defining for us something about the night, that the night is considered to be important. And again, this is how the halacha is, that the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim is definitely at night. The problem, of course, as Ben pointed out, is what aspect of telling the story does this paragraph seem to refer to? And let me classify this for you. Sibur, telling the story, or Zechira, mentioning the story? What is Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim? Anybody know?
Mentioning it
when?
At night.
Every single night, correct. So what is this paragraph talking about? Zechira or Sibur, seemingly on the surface? Who's that? Zechira, that's what it says. Again, if you look at the Gemara that it's from in Brachos and Daf Yedet, so the Gemara is clearly talking about the mitzvah of Zechira every single night of the year, of Kriyashma, and Kriyashma by Yomer. That's what he says. Montiskos Yom Tzitzchom Yerzim Koyim Echayecha. What is this paragraph doing here then? Meaning it's very nice that it tells you about nighttime, but it's not the right mitzvah. It's the wrong mitzvah. So that leads to another question, which we could spend an hour on now, which we're not going to do, which is what is the difference between Zechira and Sibur? So the answer is there's a lot of differences. Okay, meaning Sibur is the night of Pesach, and Zechira is every night, but what is the actual difference between them? So without getting into the whole story here, again, if you wanted to take a poll here, you probably could come up with like five different answers about what the differences might be. Be aware that some Rishonim actually seem to say that they were pretty much the same, interestingly enough. Okay, some Rishonim actually, or sorry, maybe it's Acharonim actually, that actually say that maybe you could have fulfilled your mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim by saying by Yomer in Kriyat Shema Marav, believe it or not. Again, not your Hidur and not the best mitzvah, but Me'ikar Adin, did you fulfill something? Midoraisa at least. Maybe not the Rabbanim, but at least Midoraisa. Some actually say the answer is yes. Believe it, it's not correct. And they give all sorts of different distinctions between Sipur and Zechira. You can guess what some of them are, I assume. Okay. One is that it's...
Death and detail.
Okay, good. What else?
Telling it to other people.
Question and answer. Another good one some of them talk about is what do we say about your experience? You're supposed to view yourself as if you left Mitzrayim, right? That doesn't exist every single night of the year. Okay. Anyway, so there are a lot of differences between the two mitzvahs. There's a whole discussion here in the Rambam. The Rambam may not actually mention two different mitzvahs, whatever the story is. The bottom line is, what is it doing here? Given all that, still, why is it here? So one suggestion that's mentioned is the following. This is sort of what Rabbi Mon says, that I sort of developed this more, which again, we don't have time to get into now. Basically, part of the point could be that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is once a year. But what's the goal of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim for the entire year? The goal should be that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim actually should impact on your life the whole year round. Every single day should be sort of like a reverberation, an echo of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Meaning, if you do your Sipur right, the night of Pesach, so hopefully what's going to happen is that the rest of the year, you're going to be thinking, it's going to come back to you, you're going to remember and say, yeah, this is amazing. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us is amazing. And like every time you say it was a carton, you know, Avon Tiskeru, however it goes in Kriyat Shema, you'll be remembering, you know, for just a second, what you did the night of the Seder, and it'll sort of bring you a flashback of, yes, this is great. Okay, that's maybe the way that it's supposed to be. And there's lots of Diyukim that can support this in the Rambam, who sort of mentions them together, the idea of Zechira and Sipur as like one mitzvah. But again, that's part of the idea here, is that this paragraph is teaching you that Zechira is a component of Sipur, but it's also the implications of Sipur, that the impact of the Sipur is supposed to lead you to the Zechira. And again, both are every night. Sipur is at night, this night of Pesach, and Zechira is every single night. Again, maybe to remind you a little bit about what happened the night of Pesach. And that's something to think about in terms of this paragraph. Okay, next.
If you didn't have a Marav on now after that, then you fulfill your obligations?
Probably, yes. Probably. Though one could argue maybe it's different, but I think many people would probably say that it's probably yes. I think. I didn't see that explicitly, but I would guess. I mean, Sipur is generally considered to be above and beyond Zechira, not, you know, separate and aside from. Okay. Next, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shazan Shalom Yisrael. Okay, and then we have the Arba Banim. So the first question is, what is this Baruch HaMakom business doing here? Why are we talking about Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Shazan Shalom Yisrael? This is a little bit out of place here. Why is that here? Any suggestions? Basically, this is the introduction to the Arba Banim. But the question is, what is it doing here? Any ideas? No ideas. Okay. So, Rav Soloveitchik has a strange idea, and this is actually mentioned, alluded to in a bunch of the Rishonim as well. I think it's the Shibboleth HaLeket or somebody else. They basically say this is like a Birkas HaTorah. Birkas HaTorah at the Seder? What are you talking about? Birkas HaTorah is said once a day in the morning, right? Why would he be talking about a Birkas HaTorah or anything like that at the Seder? Any suggestions? All right, I guess I just got to talk. All right, so make sure you're still awake. If you're not awake, then wake up. Okay, so you have an answer? Okay. Good. It's all right. Everybody's nice. Whoever listens to you.
I'm not gonna.
Okay. You'll be famous. All right. Anyway, so the idea could be like this. The idea could be that because the point of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is to teach us is Limud Torah, is learning Torah, and also to teach us the background of the Torah. The Torah was given as the next step after Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, and part of the point of leaving Mitzrayim was to give us the Torah. So basically the idea is that we want to show that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us the Torah. And in addition to that, the fact that the Arba Banim, what's the point of the segment of the Arba Banim, is to teach us, and we'll talk about this in just a second, a little bit more, that we have to teach each of the Arba Banim Torah and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the way which is appropriate for them. So we say Birkas HaTorah to say, Baruch Shenasan Torah Amo Yisrael, that this is actually an experience of Talmud Torah of teaching our children. This is like an experience, Talmud Torah, par excellence, for each child the way that he's supposed to learn it. So therefore, we introduce that by pointing out that we understand that this is Torah. This is not just Sipur, even though Sipur is obviously very important, but it's also an element of Talmud Torah and should be treated as such. So maybe that's part of the idea of the Birkas HaTorah here, or at least what this paragraph is doing here, of Baruch HaMakom. Why, based on that, why are the Arba'im mentioned here? What's the point of bringing in the Arba'im at this point in the Seder, in light of what we just said now, and also in line with what we said before about the aspects of the mitzvah of Sipur? What would you say? What does it teach us about Sipur?
It's an individual...
Exactly, just what we just said, right? That Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, number one, has to be done for your children, and number two, it has to be done individually, meaning each child gets his own personal Sipur, which is not so easy, obviously, if you have, you know, lots of children and each one wants individual attention. Not so simple, but you got to try. And that's what you see when you look at each of the paragraphs here. The Chacham says, what are the halachas that we learn? Ma'ayos ba'chukim ha'mishpatim. And you have to answer him, Ein matir nachar pesach afikomen. Okay, that's one answer. The Rosh says, Ma'avodazos lachem. And you answer him, well, you answer him whatever you answer. Okay, you're not so nice to him. Bavur zeh sashalim yutesim mitzrayim. Okay, whatever that is. The Tam, you answer him, V'chosi gadot tzedeh Hashem mitzrayim beis avadim. And the Sheva de'al Yishol, you answer, V'gadot levich al yom leimor. Also, Bavur zeh sashalim yutesim mitzrayim. So for now, the purpose, though, is that each one gets basically his own point. Each one gets its own answer, his own answer. And that's part of the idea here, that each of the Arba Bonim has his own chelik in Torah, and you have to help each one find their chelik in Torah in general, and specifically the night of the Seder, and to sort of inspire them to be part of Am Yisrael. Okay. What about the specifics of the Arba Bonim? So again, this could take us a long time, so we're not going to go into this now, but just, I guess, one quick point for each one before we go on. What would be for the Chacham? Okay, why would we say that the halacha that's specifically mentioned for the Chacham is Eimach Tiran Achara Pesach Adikoven? It says you should teach the Chacham halacha the Pesach, which simply means you should go through all of the whole Gemara, the whole Mishnah, all the halachas from beginning to end. Eimach Tiran Achara Pesach Adikoven. Why is that halacha mentioned specifically? That you can't have anything to eat after the Adikoven. Ah, so one answer is that that's the end of the Seder. That's the last halacha. If you look at the Gemara Mishnachim, that's actually the last Mishnah. Is Eimach Tiran Achara Pesach Adikoven. Good. What else? On a deeper level, maybe one could argue that this is an important yesod, is an important philosophical message also of how to teach the Chacham. You may know what I'm going to say. This is not a hard point to figure out. What's part of the point of learning? Again, this, the Chacham is an intellectual, but the point here is the Chacham has to be taught in addition to the intellectual parts of learning. Afikomen symbolizes what? Symbolizes our learning and our experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? The point is you can't have anything to eat after the Afikomen. Why is that? Because the Mepharshim say we want the taste of the Afikomen to remain in your mouth, Tam Matzah B'Siv, after the Seder is over. How would that play itself out in terms of an intellectual and emotional experience of Talmud Torah and inspiring a child to be, you know, to be committed to the Torah and Judaism?
It's not just this cold intellectual pursuit, it's a living beast.
Exactly. Okay. The point is that Torah is a Torah's Chaim, and you want to transmit to the Chacham specifically. All of them, but especially the Chacham, who can appreciate this, that it's not just about, you know, every little halacha, it's not just about the intellectual experience, it's about having the taste in your mouth, it's about feeling it, and being excited about Torah, and being committed. And that's the way to keep kids from, by the way, okay? And plenty of stories about this now, but there are plenty of, you know, ideas. One of the Gdolim had mentioned that one of the ways to make sure your kids stay from, I forgot who said this, maybe Moshe Feinstein, the things Miros at your Shabbos table when the kids are growing up. What does that have to do with anything? Why don't you teach them Torah? And the point is that Zmiros is something which can give you a bit of an emotional experience. That kids sing Zmiros, and they may be playing off on the side over there, but if they hear the Zmiros, it sticks with them. And it's something which gets them excited, it keeps them happy. And that's very, very, very important when you want to keep the Tam Matzah B'Seir, Yim Nasir Nachar Pesach HaFikomen, not just about the night of the Seder, but just in general, a message for Talmud Torah and for commitment to Torah and Yad, I think is a very, very, very important point. Okay. Any comments? All right. The Rasha. Why in the world are we so not nice to the Rasha? We say, Hakei Hashina, blunt his teeth and say, oh, it's what Hashem did for me, but it's not for him. If he were there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. What is going on here? This is not how we treat our kids. What is he talking about? Any ideas?
Break his teeth, can't eat matzah. Huh?
That makes it worse. You ruined his mitzvah. How does that help?
He already took himself out.
Ah, okay. So that's probably part of the answer. This is what the some of the Farshim say here. One second. Very good. That's very good. That's what my father always says. My father says there's a fifth child also. The fifth child is one who didn't come to the Seder. At least the Russia came to the Seder. Good. Anyway, the answer... What did you say? Anyway, so a lot of the Farshim say, this is based on the Rambam also. The Rambam basically seems to imply that no answer is actually given to the Russia. He doesn't give an answer to the Russia. The point is that if the Russia is being antagonistic, then your answering him will not help. He doesn't want to hear an answer right now. He's just trying to let off steam, either in a bad way or in a good way. We don't know what he's doing, but basically, if you try to answer him, he's just going to, oh, you know, he's going to be cynical and he's just going to not listen to you at all. It's not going to help whatsoever. So the point is that all you can do is basically say, but you can't really try to do anything to be the car of him because this Russia that we're talking about in the Haggadah is not going to listen. Okay? And this, by the way, may be true about a teenager today as well. A teenager today also, sometimes if they're not willing to listen, you can't talk to them. You can be there for them and you can say, I'm here for you, I'm happy to talk when you're ready. But if they're just saying something which shows that they don't really want to listen, they just want you to be there, then all you can do is be there, basically. And you can be warm to them, but you know, there's no point in getting a response because they'll just, you know, throw it off.
I think the chat is, I think people misunderstand the
okay.
stuff.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yes, correct.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's, I'm sure some people say that. The one I found that said that was, I don't remember who. Somebody said that. Okay, I thought I wrote down who said it here, but.
Yeah, exactly.
I really don't know why I didn't write this down. I should have written this down. Okay. I'll say the Gra. The Gra says that. The Gra says that it's in third tense and not in second tense. And the point is that where Daniel said that we're not actually saying those words to the Russia. We're saying it, you know, about him, but not to his face, because we've never said it to him directly. Ah, why is it any better? We say, oh, if he was there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. That's not very nice. So there you could answer a few different answers. My answer that I like is that it's not that he's being punished that he wouldn't have been redeemed, it's that he himself wouldn't have wanted to be redeemed. He would have wanted to be one of the people of the state of Mitzrayim. If he does not understand where our whole goal is of life and serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very negative way, that he would have been one of the people that wanted to stay there. And this is again a whole discussion, but there's a lot of midrashim that talk about a lot of people, a lot of Jews that were killed during Makas Choshech. Apparently all the ones that didn't want to come out, they didn't want to leave. So it could be what it's trying to say is that he would have been one of those people. Which again is not saying that we're punishing him. It means that he just couldn't leave the tribe. His mentality right now is not to do that. Rav Moshe Feinstein basically says that part of our goal here is to try to talk to everybody else with the hope that if we improve everyone else around, then that's the way to get to the Russia. I mean, getting to the Russia is not going to help by giving him a lecture, but if you can improve and elevate the standards of the community around him, of all the other people there, then maybe he'll come along also. But it takes time and it doesn't happen right away. Anyway, again, there's a lot more to talk about here. But
there's another
common
misunderstanding.
Yeah.
The haker chinav, it doesn't mean smash his teeth.
Right.
Hey, kuf, hey, is not hitting. Like, right?
Correct. It means to blunt, maybe in a verbal way.
There's something about, like, there's some quote in there, I don't know, was there somewhere in there, there's something about it, like eating something sour, like sour grapes, it's something different
right.
than hitting that I think
right.
that sometimes
yeah. A verbal point, which may just mean just give a very straight answer. It doesn't mean yell at him, doesn't say you're a bad person. Say, Bavur Zeh Hashem Liyotitim Mitzrayim. That's pretty straightforward, right? That's all you say. The rest of it, as we pointed out, leave a low load, is not what you say to him. That's what we're saying about him. Okay, very good. Again, I wish we had more time. There's lots of stuff here. In terms of the, I'll just skip the Tom for now. Not that he's bad, but maybe I shouldn't skip the Tom because it's not nice. But the Shana de Alishal, so there's a big machlokas of who he is exactly. The general shot that's given is that he's somebody who's just very young, a very young child. But the Rambam seems to say somebody that doesn't have wisdom. He's the opposite of the Chacham in that he's foolish. Okay? Which could be somebody who's much older, but who's foolish. But the same idea, you have to still bring him in and talk to him at his level. Rav Soloveitchik understood that it's somebody who's an adult and may not be foolish, but he's ignorant and he has no interest.
Like 80% of the Jews.
Exactly. That's where Soloveitchik was coming from, obviously. Okay, he's coming with that assimilation and all that those problems. And basically what he says is you got to bring them in, okay? Meaning somebody who's like that, they're not going to be asking you the questions. You got to find the way to inspire them. And if you can't do that, then unfortunately he's going to end up somewhere, you know, even more off the derech. Anyway, there's a lot more to talk about for the Abubanim, but I think we're going to move on for now unless anyone has any more comments. Okay, next point, Yachol Mirosh Chodesh. So what is the Haggadah doing here with this paragraph of Yachol Mirosh Chodesh? What is the, again, we say the Talmud Lomar Bayom Ahu, we teach you from the Pasuk of Bayom Ahu, maybe it's that day, but maybe that day means in the afternoon, Bavur Zeh teaches you that it's only at the time which the Matzah and the Maror are in front of you. What's the goal of this paragraph here? What function of, which Halach of Sivur Jez Mitzrayim is it teaching us?
When
to do it, okay? When to do it, in this case, specifically meaning at night, Okay, and we've already talked this a little bit before in terms of Zechira, but here is where the Haggadah actually tells us exactly, precisely how we know that it's supposed to be the night of the 15th. Okay, we said before in the Arab bottom, that's who it's supposed to be for, everybody, all the kids. Here we're saying when it's supposed to be, and the answer is, Bavur Zeh is only at the time the Matzah and Marah are in front of you, which is basically the night of the 15th, when there's a mitzvah to eat the Matzah and the Marah. Why does it have to be? And why is the mitzvah specifically the night of the 15th? Why is the initial Havanina of the Haggadah not good? Maybe we should have it from Rosh Chodesh. Why from Rosh Chodesh? Well, what happened in Rosh Chodesh? If anybody remember, this week's Parshas Chodesh, right? What happened? That's the date, right? That's the when Hashem tells Moshe, go get your korbanos ready for your Korban Pesach. That's a good time. So what's wrong with that? Why only the night of Pesach? What's the answer? Any ideas? So...
Well, the basic answer here is when you don't have that much more...
Right. Why? Why? Why is that important?
If you do it over a long period of time, you can dilute the...
Okay, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. Maybe it has to be a very forceful, concentrated idea. In addition to that... Okay, right, but why? What's the logic behind it? So, let's take something from Chaim Shmuel. I think this is a very poshut point also, that the point of Sipur Tehillim Mitzrayim, the night of the Seder, is that it has to be with the experiential part of it. You have to have the food together with the story. If you have the story but you miss the food, then everything we said before about the emotion and the experience is sort of missing. You're not experiencing and re-experiencing it. You're just telling it, but you're talking about it. So the point here is that it has to be that night so that you can have both together. Tell the story, intellectual, and also experiential. Feel it. Emotional, eat the foods, feel like you're actually there. I think that's an important point.
If you knew you weren't going to be, say, I don't know, you were going for surgery or something, you knew you were going to be out cold all of Pesach, could you bring it forward?
No, I don't think so. Absolutely. It's not bad to do it, but you don't have to fill the mitzvah at all. No, good try, but I don't think it's, not good. Okay, let's, we'll do maybe one more part and then we'll stop. We'll start Mitzchila, I guess, and we'll finish next week. Okay, is that good? We'll do one more part and finish up? All right. Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah Yehoyu Avoseinu. Okay, so now the Haggadah moves into the spiritual Gnus that we said before. This is the spiritual aspect where our forefathers were idol worshippers. Okay, then Hashem brought us close to his Avodah. And then we have this whole pasuk here about Terach, the father of Abraham, and then Hashem took Abraham, and he gave him Yitzchak and Yaakov, and Yaakov went on to do Mitzrayim. Okay, so just one basic point here. Who are the idol worshippers that we're talking about? I mean, this is the beginning of the Maskul B'Gnus and the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim with a lot of background from a long time before Egypt. But who are the Ovdei Avodah Zarah here? Anybody know? Who does it seem like? Just in the Pashut Shad of the paragraph. Okay, so the paragraph, it sounds like Terach is the answer. That's what the Ritva says. Okay, the Ritva says it's Terach. Okay? But the question I have for that is, well, who's Avoseinu here? Does Avoseinu mean we're talking about Terach? Do we care that Terach was an idol worshipper? Is that part of our ancestors?
Right?
Okay, it's true. Good. Okay. Good. Another option is some... Was there? So the Rashbates says Abraham also. How do we know that? Well, idols. This isn't part of the machlokas here. Abraham, when he was younger, could be that he actually was worshipping idols before he turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the answer, the machlokas may be based on what age Abraham turned to Hashem, and that's the machlokas in the Gemara. It may have been age 3, it may have been age 30 or so, age 40... So that's what some people say here, that maybe that Avram also is Avoseinu. Avoseinu doesn't always refer to Terach. Avoseinu often refers to the three Avos. So it could be that Avram himself actually worshipped idols. Now, the other part of this is when we talk about Maskul B'Gnus Mitzrayim B'Shvach, if you're talking about the spiritual redemption from Egypt, does it make sense that we're going all the way back to Avram? Is that when we talk about the spiritual redemption, we're talking about, well, Avram worshipped idols and Terach worshipped idols, and now Hashem redeemed us from Egypt? That also doesn't make much sense, does it? So what's the other option?
It depends what the spiritual redemption is, something much broader than just...
Oh, okay, so you could say that the spiritual redemption is much broader than just Mitzrayim. It's the spiritual redemption from everything before that. The only problem is that, well, they did, Avram came to Hashem, and Yitzchak came to Hashem, and Yaakov came to Hashem. So why, you know, it's a little strange. Hashem redeemed us now from Mitzrayim, but they already worshipped Hashem in the time of the three of us.
We have to get back to...
Okay, so maybe the point is we have to get back to what was before Mitzrayim, but then what was happening in Mitzrayim? Same point. So again, this is a whole discussion as well, but some Mepharshim also say, many Mepharshim say also that the Avodah Zarah referred to here are not just Terach, and maybe not even just Avram, but also Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim may have actually themselves worshipped idols. Okay, and that's actually proven, not from here, we're not going to go into it now, in Yechezkel, there's a Pesukim in Yechezkel in chapter 20, which actually seemed to imply that the Jews were actually worshipping idols in Egypt. Okay? They didn't get there yet. Okay, when you get there.
So
yeah.
Russian and Gwara's also,
there's midrashim that talk about the Bnei Israel getting to the lowest level. The question is, what does that mean?
What
but
is
yeah, right. Okay, good. Yeah, right. Good. Good. Okay. Right. Correct. Right. Good. So that's true. So yeah, there's actually a lot of Mamari Chazal that seem to imply that. In this paragraph, that's not the first thing you would have said when I asked you about who it means in this paragraph. But in light of the Pesukim in Yecheskel and the Mamari Chazal, it makes a lot of sense. And in light of the whole idea of Maschal Begnus Mitzrayim Mishvach, it makes a lot of sense that this paragraph is also talking about Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. That Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim also were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. And the Haggadah is telling us it didn't just start in Mitzrayim, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah took place even a long time before that as well. It may have been that they went back to it in Mitzrayim, as you said before, and now HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed us spiritually in addition to the physical redemption. So again, that's very important to understand where we came from at all stages, and then where we're going right now, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us to afterwards, to just appreciate how far it is and such a big gap in between the good and the bad, to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Any other comments before we stop for tonight?
What are Yitzchak and Yaakov doing here then?
Good question. So again, that may be part of the same idea, that we're trying to give like a broad view of Jewish history. A lot of the Parshim talk about this also. The idea that the Haggadah doesn't just look at the immediate nikuda of the Jews having slavery in Egypt, but it gives you like a bird's eye perspective of all Jewish history, starting from close to the beginning, either Avraham or Terach, and working their way all the way through. So again, in the Pasuk, this is just from the Pasuk in Yehoshua. And the point of the Pasuk in Yehoshua is to show you Terach and also show you Yaakov Bono Yehudah Mitzrayim. But the point is, it's all in a context. Okay, what's the point of the context? So, as we see in a minute, the Bris Ben Mitzrayim that was given to Avram is that the whole thing was planned. Meaning, Yetzias Mitzrayim didn't just happen in a vacuum. It didn't just happen, incidentally. HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned the whole thing already from the time of Avram Avinu. It was already planned that the Jews were eventually going to become a great nation. But it took time for it to get there. And it was a process. So it could be also this paragraph is sort of demonstrating to you the process of the Geula, and the process of becoming Am Yisrael is not something that just happens overnight, not something that just happens by itself. It's something that Hashem planned the whole time. And again, it's part of the same idea that the Seder is supposed to remind us and strengthen us that everything is a plan. And just like Yetzias Mitzrayim was a plan and took a long time and was a whole process, so too all Jewish history is like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly what he's doing in our day and 300 years ago and 200 years from now. Everything is exactly what Hashem wants. And we have to be able to see that along the way. And it's just been trying to get a good opportunity to boost our amunah and our bitachon to say that we see over time that's what Hashem did from the very beginning. He promised Avram a certain thing, and then eventually it came to be after a long period of time. So too, the Jewish history also should be able to see the same thing. Okay. Good. We'll stop here for tonight. And.